Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do.
Well, first of all, you're okay.
I'm healthy.
You had a scare last week.
Yeah, a scare and ended up in the hospital in the ER room. Thought I was, what's going on with me? And thank God it was nothing. ER room. That's a little redundant, isn't it? Emergency room. Anyway, I was, yeah.
You were in the ER.
Yeah. We went in.
How long did it take them to see you?
Wasn't bad at all. You know, when an old man comes in talking about...
Says heart.
They're like, oh.
You move to the front of the line.
Yeah. They got pretty...
Ahead of a gunshot victim?
No. It was amazing. I went in there Sunday morning, like at 6:15 a.m. And there was only one other person in the waiting room over here at Williamson. So got back really quickly. Good care and ended up spending overnight so they could do some tests the next morning. But
it's kind of nice. Get some good sleep, some good food, you know? It's really like a little spa, overnight spa.
The bed was so bad. The bed made the food taste good. That's how bad it was.
That's how bad it was. No, it can't be. It just can't happen.
The hospital is no place to get rest. But the good news is, you know, nothing's going on with me. Just I had some shoulder pain that was very similar to something I had 3.5 years ago when I did have a little heart episode. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's the same thing. They told me to come back if I ever have this. And I go in there like, oh, I think it's musculoskeletal. So I've got to see an ortho and see what's up my shoulder. But I'm so tired about talking about body pain. That's all I ever do anymore right now. So that's my New Year's commitment here on September 26th is I'm going to stop it.
It's funny. You know, you say we all do that. We went to dinner with some friends a few weeks ago, three couples. And you say we watch our parents do things, not even our parents. We watch older people do things. We go, I will never do that. Yeah. Like sit around and talk about all your ailments. Yep. Well, the first 30 minutes, that's all we did. And I don't think we thought about it. I did too. I participated, you know, and Steve, how are you feeling? I'm fine. You know, not great, so it's like, I think you just, you know, one day you're walking around and you're having normal, intelligent, semi-intelligent conversation. Right. The next week you're in these big, fat New Balance with white socks walking in the mall, you know? I mean, it just, I don't know how you get from A to B, but it happens. Yeah. And I'm really worried that it's going to happen to me.
Oh, no, it's not going to. It's happening.
I don't have any, I do have one pair of New Balance. That's not true. So yeah, I don't have any white socks.
Oh, that's
so
good.
I'm going to just kind of stop there. But I do find myself like, you know, sometimes leaving the house and I'll be in the middle of the grocery store and I'm like, man, I haven't showered. I don't have a hat on or anything. I'm just kind of forgotten. Like, what do I?
I look like a
homeless man right now. So
I saw a post on social media last week, went in the middle of all this, and it said, top 10 things to not do as you're getting older so that people will not want to avoid you. You know, so
okay, say that again.
Top 10 things that you shouldn't do.
To not do.
Yeah. So that people will not try to avoid you.
So that people will not try to avoid you.
I think the whole premise was people avoid old people because they do these certain things.
Yeah.
I may not be quoting exactly.
No, that's good. I'm a little slow.
But there were some of them that were like, you know, don't ignore talking to your grandchildren. I thought, okay, that's a weird one. But it went from 10 to 1. The number one, don't talk about health ailments all the time. And I thought, that's a good word.
Well, it's the whole basis of the Dr. Rick commercials.
Oh, it is.
You know, you're becoming your parents, the homeowner. But it's the reason they're funny is because, oh, my God, that's so true.
Yeah.
You know, the sending home with the leftovers. We're trying to hawk stuff with my kids, you know, to take home. They don't want it.
Yeah.
You know.
So I'm healthy. That's the point. I'm in great shape. I'm going to cut down a tree this weekend. I mean, what can go wrong with that? You know, I'm golden. I'm in good shape.
I mean, yeah, we don't know anybody that's had any injuries or ailments related to lawn or tree work in the last few years.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all.
Well, we had an interesting conversation post podcast last week.
Yes, I know. Are we going to talk about that today?
I think so. Okay. I've told a couple of people that we are.
Okay.
This might be the end of our podcast.
That's okay.
Or it might be the beginning of something.
Who knows?
It's probably going to be controversial.
Yeah. Okay. I'm up for it. Let's go.
I thought that, well, so, you know, a lot of events happening lately, current events. Mm-hmm. And so you and I started talking about what's the response of a Christian in the midst of all this? Certainly we don't have all those answers, but you had some good history on, you know, kind of what's happened on the last 30 years.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good summary. So just segue us there, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. Gosh, first of all, I just say this. I feel like I'm so almost unqualified, ill-equipped, or whatever, to talk about any of this kind of stuff at some level, because I know there's layers and complexities that I don't want to. I just want to acknowledge that I'm not sure I understand fully.
Right. I would agree. Same for me.
Yeah. I just remember, though, being 20, 21 years old. So we're talking about, like, you know, late 70s, early 80s, something like that. And I remember I started hearing two phrases that just made me scratch my head some. It's like, one was Christian bookstore, and the other one was Christian music. Hmm. And I remember one day I was just working in the grocery store where I worked, and I can remember exactly where I was, and I thought, is it a problem when the word Christian becomes an adjective instead of a noun? You know? Hmm. Now, I'm sure tons of people probably thought that long before I did, but it was for me, as a little aha moment going, hang on a minute. Like, yeah, suddenly we're using Christian to describe a type of bookstore, Christian to describe a type of music, you know, and of course, it became all sorts of things like that. And I think for me, it was just this, it was the beginning of this separation between all of life and, quote unquote, the right way to do life. You know, you do it as a Christian, so you need to buy your books at the Christian bookstore, and you need to listen to the music that's better for you, Christian music. And I remember even as a, you know, young 20-year-old man just going, I don't know, something about that doesn't feel right. You know, a few years later, no, it's probably around that same time, the whole, I remember I had one too, Jerry Falwell, what was it, Thomas Rhodes Baptist Church, Lynchburg, Virginia, right? Jerry Falwell started talking about these, we should all be wearing these little pins on our coat vest on Sunday mornings, and they just said, Jesus first. And I thought, oh, that's cool, man, I need to wear one of those to let the world know that Jesus is first. Well, I didn't let the world, let other people I went to church with know that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that was the early days, what would eventually become this whole moral majority. And, man, I can remember just going, this is so cool. We finally got somebody that's nationally known, and he's talking about what we believe, you know, and this is going to be great. And, again, it wasn't long until I just thought, well, hang on a minute. What does moral majority even mean? And, you know, I just started asking questions about, is it good that we're trying to take, that we're trying to count on government to do what the church is supposed to do? Hmm. And so I just think that's where our conversation started last week. I just thought, man, I just feel like I've looked back on that, and I think now I've watched it, you know, 30, 40 years later, grow into a thing where there's such a division between what God created, the whole world, and between what we want to define as sacred. It seems like sacred is becoming something much more narrowly defined, that it has to have a certain, I don't know, tilt to it. And so then I just think that creates all sorts of interesting dynamics and conflicts. And then I think, you know, I feel like I'm pretty conservative when we talk about like politics or whatever. Yet, I think sometimes I look at what's going on from the conservatives and I just think, golly, are we counting on the government to do the work of the church? Are we counting on the government to be the kingdom of God? And that just scares me when the American flag seems to be at the same level as the quote-unquote whatever that even is, the Christian flag. You know, it just feels like that there's a kingdom that's greater than the other. No, I'd say it more directly. It doesn't feel like there is a kingdom that's greater than this kingdom. And yet, you know, I have great friends who talk about, yeah, but we need to be involved in policy, and we need to work on polity, and we need to, you know, I hear the phrase, we need to keep us a Christian nation. And I just laugh. I don't think we ever were a Christian nation.
Right, no, I don't either.
You know, we were founded by a bunch of deists, but, you know, this whole concept of we're this great Christian nation, we need to return to our roots. I just scratch my head sometimes going, that feels a little too simpleton for me.
I mean, yeah, historically, I think that, you know, when you look back at the 13 colonies, they really, I mean, it was a mess, and they came over to not have to be under the reign of the king,
right,
fiscally
Church
or religiously, right, the Church of England.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, you had 13 different denominations, basically, 13 different beliefs, and that's okay, I thought your take on the moral majority and I've always thought about the Christian adjective. You've said that before, and I just thought, you know, in the today, it feels like we're intertwining politics as being leveled up to the level of things of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the better way to say it.
And especially with the Charlie Kirk assassination, obviously that's the.
So
elephant
tragic
in the room,
sure.
And it's horrible, you know?
Absolutely.
It's horrible when any 31-year-old person dies with two kids, without two kids. I mean, death is horrible. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing more to say about that. But there appears to be a rallying around that event that is kind of melding the spiritual and the political together. And I have the same reaction to that as you had to Christian music, Christian bookstore. I think that's dangerous. I think that's great. I think it's great that a believer is in politics.
Absolutely, yeah.
And in medicine and in art and So that's that. But man, this we are drawn to that for some reason. This is the Republican Party is the party of the Christian. The Democratic Party is the party of the Christian. If you ask them, they're the giving. Yeah. Caring about people party, the Republicans are the, rich and the party again of the Christian faith. And I don't think either of those is true. I think they are so different. They are different things. They are not the same. Why do you think, as a counselor, why do you think we are drawn to that? We're not the first country to be drawn to that. It's history.
Gosh, I don't know. As you ask the question, I think first thing that comes to my mind is, kind of what we've been talking about the last 3 or 4 weeks in our unofficial series about emotions, right? I just think, fear is such a prominent emotion in this broken, fallen world that we all live in, And I think when we're afraid, we look for something that's going to give us security, safety, refuge, hope. There's nothing wrong with that. But as people of faith, ultimately, I think that's found in the scripture. It's found in who our God is. But I think it's easier sometimes to go, what can my neighbor do for me? Or what can my government do for me? Or what can my nation do for me? So it feels like a lot of times it's just that there's this phenomena of, I need something that's going to keep everything safe and keep everything good. And gosh, hear me. I love that we live in a country that wants to provide and protect. And there's so much about America. I mean, gosh, I love America. I'm a patriot, period. And it's not about what America's doing. It's about what we as believers sometimes are counting on. That I just think, I just scratch my head and I'm concerned. And it makes me not know what to do at times, if I'm really honest.
Right.
Like, there's this part of me, I read through the book of Romans, certain passages there, and I'm going, man, God's put governmental authority in place for a reason. And, at some level we defer to it. At some level we need to influence it. So I go, okay, I think that's why it's great to have people involved in that arena. So it's not that I'm anti being involved with government. I just think it's like, what are we counting on government to do for us? And candidly, has it become a form of idolatry for us?
That's a great question.
Yeah,
you feel like, the button you referred to earlier, the Jesus first, it feels like there's a move towards the Jesus first button alongside the flag and the cross there, that they're all at the same level.
Same level. Yeah, that's a good way to say it. That's a good image.
And man, that is not, again, opinion, that's what you get on a podcast.
Right.
But that is not how I read the Bible.
Yeah.
It is a different, they're just different things. And the debate politically as to what you believe, that's one thing, and that's fine. It's good to have discourse and debate and disagreement over policy. We've had that for the entire life of our country, and I think that's good. But this, again, I'm alarmed a little bit by, more than a little bit, actually, by what I see lately.
I read a thing, and I don't know anymore if anything you read is true or not.
Right.
It's become my theory. But I read a thing about a pastor somewhere in the Southwest who, his sermon the week after Charlie Kirk was shot, again, horrible tragedy, was the kind of the crescendo moment of is, we need more little Charlies in America. And there's a part of that, like, I appreciate the sentiment behind it, a guy who stood for truth. I mean, like, so many beautiful things about who that man was, right?
Yeah.
But I just thought, gosh, coming from a pulpit in a church, the phrase was, we need more little Charlies. And I just thought, or would it be better to have more little Jesuses in America? What is it that we really need in this country?
Right.
You know? And so I'm in the conundrum in my season life. I feel like I don't really have a place really where I fit in, and I find myself in a lot of conversations where I don't feel like I'm trying to ever be a contrarian or be adversarial for the sake of it. But man, I get around to my friends and I listen to the rhetoric and I'm just like, okay, yeah, you know, I don't have much to say to that.
No,
you know, and I feel like a man without a country in some places. Man, where do I really fit right now?
It's funny you say that. I've got a lean more conservative, although honestly, I'm probably more in the middle on a lot of things. Yeah. And I've got a good friend that I have lunch with. He's an attorney here in Nashville. One of my favorite people on the planet, and certainly one of my favorite people to talk to.
Yes.
He is a New Yorker. And we had never, over the years, we had never discussed politics. We did a couple of years ago. And he said, I'd love to talk about that with you. He said, I'm just going to let you know I'm a partisan Democrat. And I thought, oh, this is going to be fun, you know, because he's a thinker, you know. And he asked me about my politics. I said, well, you know, embarrassingly, and again, this is probably a little embarrassing too, although I didn't think it was embarrassing, but I have gotten some interesting responses on this. I'd never heard of Charlie Kirk until this happened.
Mm-hmm.
Never, honestly, I'd never heard of him. Now, I'm not the most aware in terms of media, social media, so that, you know, that's that. But I said, you know, I remember fondly, whether accurate or not, I remember fondly some, you know, the Reagan years.
Mm-hmm.
And his comment was, oh, you don't have a home. meaning, what I meant by that and what he meant by that is if you are not at one of the polar ends right now, it seems like you are, as you just described, you're
just
a
don't
bit,
know where you fit.
You mm-hmm. just don't know where you fit. Mm-hmm. You're a bit rudderless. Mm-hmm. And so, I think one of the things I thought, what I would hope this conversation does today is if there are people that listen that are in that camp, just a little bit of encouragement.
Yeah.
That you don't have to, out of fear, gravitate towards one end or the other.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, ask questions, try to find out information.
Yep.
And
you know, I haven't thought about this. We didn't talk about this last week, but when you just said that, it kind of goes back to our very first podcast that we never released.
Paradox.
Yeah. Like I think embracing the paradox of living, holding two extremes at times, instead of feeling like I've got to just move my camp all the way to the right or all the way to the left. And I don't know. I think there's something that maybe it's harder to live embracing paradox, holding both ends. But I think I could say, out of personal parents, a personal experience, it can be confusing at times.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's something really healthy about going, I'm not just going to write something off because it came from this side of the aisle instead of that side of the aisle.
Right.
That's what feels dangerous to me.
I would agree. And one of the things we've tried to always talk to our kids about is, you know, everybody, I think, when you're young, most people, when you're young in your 20s and, you know, snap judgments, more dogmatic. That's just the nature of that.
Yeah,
that's okay. It's age appropriate. But just walk a mile in somebody else's shoes, as the old saying says, and just think about it from their perspective a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whatever, if you look at the history of the world and how countries and kingdoms are formed, anytime you're in the majority of a populous group in a country.
Yeah.
You have advantages.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in the minority, you have disadvantages.
Right.
It doesn't mean you can't succeed. It doesn't mean things don't always go your way, but that's just a historical fact.
Mm-hmm.
You and I were born in the majority in this country.
Mm-hmm.
There are built-in advantages to that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so I'm not apologizing for that,
mm-hmm.
but I'm acknowledging it.
Right. Right.
And so I think we've... What I hope to see is, as I get older, what I would like to see is just a little more acknowledgement maybe of, hey, there are other people who have had different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I'm a patriot. I am pro-military.
Mm-hmm.
I've had family members serve.
Absolutely.
I am grateful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even if you look statistically mm-hmm. at 50 countries around the world,
mm-hmm.
opportunity here is probably
mm-hmm.
as good as anywhere else.
Yeah.
Or better.
Yeah.
And we are certainly not a perfect nation
yeah.
with a perfect track record because we're made up of imperfect people.
Of course. Yeah.
And so I think when I was in my 20s, I would blindly, you know, that what I just said would have been offensive to 25-year-old Steve.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, it's funny when you said you know? I thought back to when I was in high school, and I loved American history, you know, those classes. I just enjoyed understanding. And I remember studying, 1930s, maybe it was Chicago or Boston, but they were talking about the politics there. And I think it's where the phrase was coined. I could be wrong, but I think the phrase mudslinging was coined during those years because people started personally attacking each other, like for the first time ever, you know, and how, quote unquote, inappropriate that was. And I can remember thinking even then, you know, late 70s, early 80s, just thinking, man, I'm glad that's not what our country's like now, you know, that you know, there's a sense of decorum, if you please, between the right, the left, you know, political parties. And I think now, oh, my gosh, was I a fool to ever think that that's what was probably going on then fully, but for sure what it's become now. But it was about that. But as I was thinking about that again this week, I saw a little clip, and I have no idea where this came from. I wasn't looking for it, but it was was it Reagan and Mondale that ran against each other? Mm-hmm. Is that right? Okay. And when you said Reagan, this is what made me think of it. And they're doing a debate, and I can't remember, not Sam Donaldson, but somebody that looks like him was the moderator, and he asked this question. And I'm not sure my number's right, but you'll get the point. He said, "Mr. Reagan, you know, you've just turned 76 years old, and there's some concern about your age. And as, you know, when President Kennedy was in office, he would have complete sleepless nights when he was dealing with the Cuban Missile Crisis. And it's always a possibility as the president you could get to a situation like that. Would you speak to the issue of your age?" And in classic Reagan style, he goes, "Well, yes, Liz, let me answer your question directly. Age is not going to be an issue for me, and I will not make it an issue for my opponent either. I will not disregard him just because of his youth and inexperience."
Oh my gosh.
And Mondale is dying laughing.
Yeah.
The moderator is dying laughing, and Reagan just has that little snarky smile on his face. But it was so like three gentlemen, and just like, "Oh my gosh, you got me. That was a great joke."
That's funny.
It wasn't, you know, "Go to hell. I can't believe you came after my age."
Right,
you know?
Right.
It was just something so refreshing about that. And I'm sure there was tons of ugly in that era too. I'm not trying to idealize that we need to get back to the good old days. But I do think some of the language of the last three or four presidents, I feel like, so both sides of the aisle is all I'm saying. Whether they were in office or after office, I'm just saddened by it. I just think, you know, be strong, be opinionated, but is there a way to still be, I don't know what the right word is, kind, gracious, whatever the right word is. You know?
It feels very middle school sometimes.
Well, I think staying on the issue instead of the person, sorry.
Yeah, no, it is... It just feels like two middle school kids talking.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is I miss the decorum when you have conversation.
Yeah.
And we just have, I think the gloves are off, the filters are off, whatever it is. We speak in ways sometimes that just amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember thinking this even early on, I did a little bit of my college work on this at the end to graduate, but you know, there are areas of life. If you look at we were sitting around last night, we watched a Thursday night NFL game. You know,
wait, you chose that over Family Feud?
Well, we didn't. I ran out of. We've gone through all the celebrity Family Feuds with Steve Harvey. Okay. Harvey, so I got to wait till they come
out. If you didn't listen to last week, that's a throwback. But keep going.
Yeah. But I thought, you know, a coach has leeway that if you acted like some coaches act on the sideline in a normal course of business, it would not be accepted.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I think the same thing happens in politics. You can say and do things that, you know, you just can't say in normal life without repercussions.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like you, I don't know that there's any such thing as the good old days.
Right.
And
right.
I don't think that exists. And they weren't that great. Time moves on as it should. So, but I do think as a believer, the way we talk to each other is important.
Yeah.
And the way we talk about things, the words we use mm-hmm. are important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, I remember years ago just thinking about, you know, what's the ultimate point of the Bible? You know, trying to, if I could synthesize it down to just one word or sentence. And I think there was a book I'd read called Testaments of Love back in the day. You know, I think that book did a good job of kind of summarizing that ultimately the Bible is a story of God's redemptive pursuing love. It looks very different in the Old Testament than does the New Testament. There's confusion for some people about what the Old Testament looks like, and probably confusion for some people about the New Testament as well. But you know, if I were to say, gosh, what's the ultimate message? The message really is God's constant pursuit of humans to love them and to give them life in a better fashion. And then I think the invitation from the Bible is that we learn to love each other. We learn to love our neighbors and even love those who hate us. You know, I mean, those are strong words.
Yeah.
And you know, I think we're living in a culture where it's easy to, well, because you believe this, it's like loving you doesn't apply to me. Or we nuance it and go, well, I love you, but I just hate your politics and hate everything about the way you talk and hate everything about the way you do. And I just go, I'm not sure you can put all that together and be okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, I think love is more gracious than that.
And even that's a good explanation. And even in the Old Testament, you know, as an overview, God creates the perfect garden. And we mess it up.
Yep.
And so what does he do? He gives us a way out of that. He gives mm-hmm. us cover and redemption in mm-hmm. that. Well, and there are nations formed. We mess that up. He gives us kings. We mess that up. Yeah. Judges, we yeah. mess that up. He gives us prophets. We mess that up. We yeah. kill them.
Yeah.
We would have done the same thing that Absolutely. The people in that day did. Mm-hmm. So at every turn, God creates this environment for us. Mm-hmm. And at every turn, we screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
And at every turn, he pursues us and follows us and redeems us.
Mm-hmm.
So it is different, but in that way, that's a carryover to the New Testament,
yeah.
ultimately fulfilled
yep.
in what Christ did. But it is. It's his constant pursuit of us. And
yeah.
again, I think the thought that what you and I talked about last week and just the overwhelming thought I've had over the last couple of weeks is all of these issues, that's not the only assassination that's gone on,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. is that... That is one discussion, but there is a discussion that is just much higher and greater than politics.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I think it's just a dangerous world when those two are meshed together.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. They get crushed up. Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah. Yeah. I think when I look at where my kids are as they're growing up and just so proud of who they are and what they're struggling with and what they're trying to believe and where they line up in all sorts of areas, one of the things that I love watching in them in this season is that at some point, I feel like they'll kind of just raise their hand and go, you know, but ultimately, you know, this is God's economy, this is God's world. And I just hope they don't lose sight of that, you know, that there is a kingdom that's greater than this kingdom by far. And it's the only kingdom that's eternal.
And it's different.
Mm-hmm. It is. And, you know, works on a different spreadsheet.
It does. And... You know, I just don't want us to lose that. And
yeah.
I think it's Psalm 67 that says he governs the people with, he governs the nations with justice and guides the people of the whole world.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, you know, who our leaders are, what happens in this country, mm-hmm. that's God's sovereignty, in
yeah.
my opinion.
Yeah. There was a season in my life when the kids were, our kids were young, and I would think, oh my gosh, what kind of world am I leaving them? What are, you know, not like I'm in charge of the whole world, but you know what I mean? But
yeah.
just like, what's it going to be like when they have kids? And, you know, now, you know, they have kids. And then sometimes I'll look at my grandbabies and I'll think, oh my gosh, you know, what are we leaving them? And is there, you know, how can it get better? And then I think when I'm in my best mind, I think I'm able to go, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with this great American experiment. You know, I mean, I love America. But I think, okay, even when I pause and think worst case scenario, what if whatever happens? Well, my grandkids are going to be okay. Life might be harder than it was in the world I grew up in. There may be some things that are more difficult. There may be challenges they face. But, you know, the reality is, I don't want their allegiance ultimately be to just a country. I want it to
right.
be to
any country.
To what you said. Exactly. To what you said from that psalm is the one who governs all nations. And, You know, I don't know. I just think the older I get, the more I'm just like, you know, God, I don't know what your divine plan is, what the story is you're writing here, but I'm confident you're writing one. And, you know, generally, people of faith, even in horrible conditions, in some ways, that's when there's been some of the greatest growth and, you know, people love this word revival around here. I don't even know what it means, and a lot of people who use it, but you know, the reviving of people's lives happens sometimes in the middle of political, et cetera, persecution. And again, do I hope that for my kids, my grandkids? No. But I also realize there's a God who loves them and they'll be okay.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's good. So what do you do with all that information? How do you sit in this angst? What do you, because I know there are people asking, okay, that's great. I get your point. What do we do with that?
Yeah. Boy, and I don't know if I even know the answer to that. You know, I think there are times in the last 20 years, I'll find myself just go apathetic. You know, I watched my dad, you know, my dad, you know, born in 1927. So he grew up in a South that was very Democrat, Tennessee that was very Democratic, you know, East
Southern
Tennessee.
Democrat.
Mm-hmm, exactly, you know. And then everything kind of flipped, you know, in the, what, 70s, 80s, I suppose, is when that began happening, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think he made that flip a little bit. But then, I don't know, somewhere in the late 80s, I just remember my dad just being, I'm done with it all. They're all, Islamists, they're all crooks, yeah. You know. And he didn't vote again the rest of his life. He was just like, I don't care. It doesn't matter. And I don't think my dad even hyper-spiritualized it, you know, like, well, it doesn't matter. I'm a, you know, citizen of the kingdom. I never heard him say something like that. I just think he was like, I'm so over this. I don't know who to trust. My trust has been broken so much. I'm waving a white flag, you know.
Right.
I don't think I've gone that extreme, but I've had those seasons where I'm just like, oh my gosh, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm voting for the lesser of two evils, it feels like.
You
know?
Right.
Locally to nationally. And so I don't think turning apathetic is necessarily the right response. You know, we are citizens of this world, while being greater than that, citizens of the capital K kingdom. But I think there are some times when I just scratch my head and I go, man, what do I do with all this? I think the one place it leads me sometimes that I'm grateful for is when it just leads me to almost being able to chuckle, not in a condescending, not in an arrogant way, but just being able to chuckle going, I don't think I'm supposed to understand it all. I don't think I'm supposed to get it all. I don't think there's supposed to be a party I fully align with. I don't think that's what it means to live in this world. I think I should feel some of the confusion. And in my better moments, I think I'm just able to go, okay, well, I'm gonna do what I believe is healthy and good and wise, and keep moving forward and trusting again something bigger than just the system right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What about you? Same. That's a great question.
Well, I would agree with your answers. I can get. I'm fairly apolitical anyway.
Mm-hmm. Same.
And probably because of that. I mean, I certainly don't want to diminish the work that politicians do. We need it.
Absolutely.
It's a necessary thing to govern the way we've chosen to govern.
Grateful for it, right? Right.
So there's that. It's not my skill set. It's mm-hmm. not what I'm good at doing or called to do, whatever you want to, however you want to say it. And so, and I don't, I guess in my, you know, the cynic in me says, I don't think anything ultimately changes that much.
Yeah.
Because of that. Yeah. People would strongly disagree with that.
I know they would. Mm-hmm.
I just don't see it. Mm-hmm. I see a giant tug of war that's happened in our country for the last 250 years, and we've basically stayed pretty steady.
Mm-hmm.
When you
mm-hmm.
look at the overall performance,
mm-hmm.
and so mm-hmm. like the stock market, up and down, tumultuous at times, but mm-hmm. You know, since its inception,
mm-hmm. up and to the right, yeah,
10%. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I do. I remember a couple of things that just struck me when I was younger. I think I told you this story. Heard a guy, a pastor in Texas, talk about this one day with his Texas drawl, and I thought, this is really good. He was talking about a little verse in Hebrews that says, do good and share.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I love this. Keep going. Yeah.
And, golly, if that's the only thing you did for the rest mm-hmm, of your life,
mm-hmm.
that'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about their city the couple of playgrounds that were near their church were dilapidated, old, in need of help. One of the schools needed help. And in his Texas accent, he said, well, I talked to Mike the other day, and we got a guy that can fix that. And I know a guy that supplies playground equipment. He went on and on and on. And they built this new playground.
Wow.
For free.
Wow. For the city.
For the city.
I love that.
And, you know, one of our local churches here, hats mm-hmm. off. I don't know all the backstory, but they have, at their own cost, built a facility and structured an organization around adoption yeah. and foster care and helping that world, helping the Department of Children's Services
yeah.
here in Nashville.
Yeah,
I don't really need to know more than
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is a... That moves the needle.
Well, I think that's the church at its best, right?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Even the guy, I told this little story, pulling to get something at the convenience store the other day, there's a dry cleaners next door. Guy's got a sign on there, said if you are out of a job and yeah. you are going to an interview,
yeah.
we'll clean your outfit for free.
Shout out to Jimmy's Cleaners, right?
I don't know Jimmy from Adam's yep. House Cat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really need to.
Yeah.
We could use a little more of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And boy, I'm going to sound like an old guy here. Maybe a little less posting and a little more volunteering.
Yeah.
Serving, if you're,
whatever. Yeah.
If your hot button is abortion on either side.
Yeah.
Okay. There are plenty of women's shelters that could use volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of children's homes that could use volunteers. Mm-hmm. All of the public schools in our area mm-hmm. will let you come in and volunteer and just be a lunchroom monitor, give the teachers a break,
mm-hmm.
be an encourager to a young boy or a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
mean, so I just think we could do with a little more doing, mm-hmm. doing good and sharing mm-hmm. and maybe a little less mm-hmm. rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. I'm recalling something, and I hope this is accurate. You know, I'm going to big.
Well, it's a podcast. It doesn't have to be accurate.
Big asterisk. So, no, yeah. I want to be. But isn't there something about the way a lot of hospitals were formed, you know, many, many, many years ago, probably before they look anything like what we know as a hospital, but they came out of Christian people who are just looking to do good. Go back to your Hebrews verse.
Yeah.
And they realized, man, there's the sick. There's the outcast. What can we do to help them?
Yeah,
and I do think there is something about that verse when you shared that last week. I'm so glad you shared that story again. That's stuck with me all week.
Hmm.
You know, how does it go? It's
do good and share.
Do good and share.
I think it's stuck in the. I could get this wrong, but it's in that Hebrews 12:13.
Yeah,
you know, the cloud of witnesses, which is all we really read about. But then this little obscure. I think it's maybe chapter 13. A little obscure verse. So just don't neglect doing good and sharing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it reminds me of when our youngest son, he came up, I don't know, I would call it like a really important life verse or whatever that hit him somewhere, maybe it was right after college, maybe a senior year of college. And I think it's in 1 Thessalonians 4, and it says, I won't quote it perfectly, but it says, and make it your ambition to live a quiet life, work with your hands, and mind your own business.
Mm.
And you think about those three phrases. You know,
and my Baptist roots are going to come out here. I'm going to give you a hearty amen on that. golly.
But isn't it beautiful, though?
I put that up in my house.
Yeah. You know, and so I studied a little bit, you know, make your ambition to live a simple life. In other words, I don't have to have everything.
Right.
Doesn't mean I need to live in poverty. There's nothing wrong. I'm a capitalist. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with money. But
right.
But I can make tons of money, but I can still live simply. Life yeah. doesn't need to be so complex. Work with your hands. That doesn't mean literally you got to be in the trades. Fine to be in the trades. Wonderful to be in the trades. But it means work with what's in front of you. That's the idea there. It's, gosh, what is yours to steward? In other words, and which the third phrase kind of reinforces that, and mind your own business. You know, it's not like we say in the South, mind your own business, get away from me. It's just saying be attentive to what's in your sphere of influence. And don't worry about the things that are outside of your sphere of influence. Mm. You know, and I don't know. I think there's something about a world where we can live like that, where we can, you know, do good and share, where we can take that 1 Thessalonians passage well and just live out of it. That sounds very, the older I get, I just go, man, I want to live that way. I just want to live simply and take care of what's given me. And I want to find places to do good and share that good with others when at all possible. Honestly, that's the catalyst for this podcast that you and I started. It's just like, whatever we've got that's good.
Right.
Gosh. And whatever we've learned from our bad.
Right.
Can we just share it? You know, can we put it out there? We're not trying to proselytize you. We're not trying to get you to believe the way we believe. No. We're just going.
We're pretty open about that.
Yeah, but here's some things, man. We've tried to get perspective on, and if it encourages, we're thrilled. And if it ticks you off, well, good. Maybe it'll help grow you some too. But
yeah,
that's not the goal.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Do good and share. I love that.
I know. I thought that was a great verse, and you know, I just think especially as things seemingly become more complex,
mm-hmm.
it's harder to live a simple life mm-hmm. or and keep is. Out all the noise. But one thing, and I just think, at least for me, the times that I've done things, been a doer of things that I'm good at
mm-hmm.
that can help another person.
Yeah.
Are the times I've enjoyed life the most,
mm-hmm.
to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, and you don't always have the luxury of your work world being, you know, necessarily where your best skill set is. Right. But we can all, I mean, I remember, you know, coached a lot of things for my kids growing up, and my buddies and I would get together and we would coach. We had a great time. We probably had more fun than the kids did, yeah. you know. It didn't happen often. Most parents were great, but you get, you know, one parent a season that's just not happy with what yeah. you're doing. And kind of my go-to line was, hey, I remember when I signed up, and there were a lot of blank spots left. You know, and you're welcome to sign up. You're welcome to come on and coach with us.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. and so.
Or I give you the whistle and you can coach.
Or man, yeah, knock yourself out, you know. And so, and that was, mm-hmm. you know, Jen would say, don't be rude about that, you know. But there's some truth in that. Like, yeah. hey, listen, I'm not an NFL coach, and we're volunteering, and there's plenty of places to volunteer. And the point was, hey, listen, you know, pick up if you're gonna complain,
do something
and post and be the mm-hmm. person in the room that's always talking about how bad our country is and mm-hmm. and where are we mm-hmm. and all this that okay, you have that right,
yeah,
but pick up a shovel,
yeah, move some dirt,
move some dirt, stop talking
mm-hmm.
and do something
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good word. That's really good.
When you get old, you can say stuff, you know.
Maybe we should change our name to Curmudgeons.
Yeah, I'm definitely. You'd get three votes in my family probably for Curmudgeon. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
I'm sure Jen. You know, Jen listens to the podcast, and I'm sure there's one ear that's like, "Oh, okay, that's good," and then one ear like, "Oh my God, what's he gonna say?"
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was just talking to Laura, and her heart rate goes up probably.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's like, oh God, what are they like?
Yeah, I just think I think I'm pretty sure it was John Kennedy who said something like, I've never met a person that I couldn't learn something from.
Hmm.
You know, that's a great
that
adage.
That is great.
Isn't it? Like, we've spent some time recently with some people who are probably in a different camp about most issues than we are significantly. But we have some family members that we would be in different camps about a lot
sure.
of things. But you know what? I have never been with them and thought, oh, this is a waste of time. I've never been with them and thought, oh, there's nothing enjoyable here. I love the dialogue. I love being able just to be with people who just want to talk and, you know, don't need to persuade, but aren't afraid to say, well, gosh, here's where I come down on that. Like, I enjoy that. I don't think I've got the corner of the market on truth. And I want to have my ears open to hear and learn.
Yeah, I think that posture would probably benefit us.
Yeah, yeah.
Because no matter how old you are, you're right. You can't. There's always room to learn.
Yeah.
From other people
yeah.
and their perspectives. And generally, when people lean a certain way on any issue, whether it's political or a spiritual issue or just a life issue, there's something in their past that's formed that.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, and they're leaning that way for a reason. And you know, getting to know them, getting mm-hmm. to know that reason, mm-hmm. personality type mm-hmm. will uncover a lot of mm-hmm. that. And
yeah.
And I think that, you know, being interested in another person's life
yeah,
is a great way to encourage people.
Yeah. I think about that with even in the simplistic, the ridiculous, you know, like, you know, I was raised in East Tennessee, all my dad's family's in Knoxville area. You know, I think I could go through like, you know, all sorts of therapy and all sorts of, you know, interactions with other people, and I'd probably still go, yep, yeah, I'm still a Vols fan. You know, it's just like, it's just, I grew up with it. It's like, you know, I know you're an Arkansas boy, you know, and I don't care how much my team disappoints me, how many freaking heartbreaking losses there are from fumbles or whatever. There's something in you still just go, man, but that's kind of where I am. And, you know, I something as simple as that, it does, it's informed by a whole lot of years. And so I think that's why when we're trying to make somebody change overnight and you go, gosh, if you don't understand their story and understand why, whatever the topic is, I love how you said that, and you just think there's a better way for them to think, you need to get to know people. What's that old line? You have to earn the right to be heard.
Yeah.
You know, which means I got to care about you, not just transactionally, but truly care about you. Some of my greatest relationships of the last 20 years have been with people who are in very different worldviews, faith backgrounds than me. But just to be able to be with them, just realize I don't have to persuade them to be like me. I just want to enjoy them. I want to do good. I want to love them. And gosh, if we get into some conversations about something different and there's something I have that I can offer them and it's good for them, yay. But I don't live with the angst of, oh my gosh, I've got to make you believe like me. I don't think
some of that is a season of life too?
I think it was for sure in the earlier years I felt that need.
Yeah.
I was in evangelism explosion, going door to door, helping people believe like I believed because they needed to.
And if they didn't, they were wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. It was super. Life was super, super, super binary. Everything was then.
That's a great word.
Yeah. There are some things that are black and white. There's a small handful of things I would die for, but a lot of men, I want to live in between.
And that list, as we've talked about, that list gets shorter every year.
I think so. I remember years ago, I may have shared this. I think I've shared this with you off air before, but I was at a church in the western suburbs of Chicago, and we brought a guy in to candidate to be the new senior pastor. And I got to sit in there and listen as some brilliant minds were interviewing, just really sharp people who were involved in, you know, big graduate schools and seminaries in the area. And one of the questions they asked him was, what are the things that you would die for? And my buddy Jim, he sat there, he became a dear friend and still is, but he sat there and he thought for a minute. And then he said, well, and he had three answers, three things. You know, he's really succinct about those, you know. Deity of Christ was his first one, you know, and he kind of marched all the other three. He said, yep, that's it. And I remember when the guy goes, wait, you only mentioned three things? And he goes, yeah. He goes, well, what? And the kind of interviewer said, well, what about enlisted some hot topic of, you know, the late 90s, whatever it would have been. And Jim goes, oh, yeah, that's an important topic, and that matters to me. But you asked me what I would die for. I would not die for that topic.
Right.
And then he went on, and I remember he said this phrase. He said, you know, for 2,000 years, church history has not agreed on that. So I'm pretty sure I don't have the final answer on it.
Right.
He goes, but those are the three things I would die for. And he was just so at peace with his answer.
Yeah.
And I just thought, yeah, I can live in the tension of a whole lot of things. But there's a small handful of things. I go, no, at the end of the day, if you push me, this is where I'm going to come down on that.
Well, that perspective, that's a healthy perspective.
Mm-hmm.
State the obvious.
Yeah.
And I think if you're, you know, if you listen to this and you're in the camp and you are a follower of Christ and that's what you believe, even more important that I think we realize, as we say all the time, I mean, Genesis 3.
Yeah.
We're flawed.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that my thinking is flawed.
That's right.
That means statistically, if I say I believe 100 things and I know I'm right, I'm dead wrong about some of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there's a strong likelihood that there's probably something you're pretty dogmatic about that you're wrong about.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is just a different way of saying what you said a minute ago. Just consider things from, you can learn from other people.
Yeah.
Just consider the possibility that the thing you hang your hat on that are not those top two things or three things that you'd die for, consider that some of those things you may be wrong about. Yeah. I may be wrong about.
Yeah.
I probably am wrong about some of them.
Yeah.
So giving up the idols a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Giving up the need to always be right. Man. And again, instead, man, this is a great place to start landing the podcast.
Yeah.
Giving up the need to be right and instead learning to do good and share. Being able to embrace a paradox, being able to let the ethic of love be the most important thing that I bring to the table every day.
Mm.
feels like a really good way to live.
Probably be more of that would probably lead to a more enjoyable place to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's both and, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Good.
Good conversation, man. Good to be with you.
Yep.